I'm not always in agreement with the Pioneer Homes home program, to be sure, and I've criticized it in the past and undoubtedly will in the future. But I don't. I'm not hung up on the problem. This problem, I think, giving them the option of they want to hire a nursing home administrator who's licensed, that's fine. If they want to hire a general manager to manage and supervise the business of the nursing home, that's fine too. Hospitals don't require a licensed administrator, and I don't know why some of these others do. The only reason that nursing home administrators are licensed actually in the state is because it's a federal requirement, and for Medicaid and Medicare reimbursements from the federal government. And otherwise, we wouldn't do that. But that's in federal law, so we have to conform with that. But with the Pioneer Homes, we don't have to do it. And I don't think it's any big deal, but I just didn't give the Pioneers that freedom. So I'm going to vote no on the amendment.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I was off the floor. What's the question?
Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 5? And Amendment Number 5, Representative Brown, is line 17 to 20, page 1. Delete the sentence which begins on line 17. This section does not apply, et cetera. Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 5? To the House Health, Education, and Social Services Committee substitute for Senate Bill 256. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? The clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 5 yeas, 33 nays.
The House has failed to adopt Amendment Number 5. Are there further amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 256, amended House, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
House Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 256 by the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Nursing Homes and Pioneers Homes and Providing for an Effective Date.
Is there debate? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
Question is, shall the House Health, Education, and Social Services Committee substitute for Senate Bill 256, amended House, pass the House, members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? The clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 34 yeas, 4 nays.
The House Health, Education, and Social Services Committee substitute for Senate Bill 256, amended House, has passed the House. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call and final passage of House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 256 be considered the roll call and the effective date clause.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 547 by the Judiciary Committee, entitled An Act Permitting the Exclusion of the Public During Testimony of Young Victims of Sexual Offense. The Judiciary Committee had the bill under consideration. The committee recommended replace with House Committee substitute for Committee substitute for Senate Bill 547 by the Judiciary Committee, entitled An Act Permitting the Videotaping of or the Exclusion of the Public During Testimony of Young Victims of Sexual Offenses and Changing Rule 804, Rules of Evidence Relating to Exceptions to the Hearsay Rule. There was a zero fiscal note attached. The due pass was signed by Representative Barnes, Chairman, concurred in by Anderson, Buchholz, Freeman, and Phillips.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House Judiciary Committee substitute be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the House Judiciary Committee substitute is adopted in lieu of the original bill. Will the clerk please read the First Amendment?
Amendment number 1 by Representative Barnes and Fuller. Page 2, line 25, after the word child, delete under, and after age, add or younger. The sentence now reads, The order shall be granted if the court finds that the child is 16 years of age or younger at the time of the trial.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
There is objection. Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This was a drafting error in the bill that we are now attempting to correct.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I support the idea that the bill be consistent throughout, but I oppose the language. I have an amendment on the clerk's desk that would make the language consistent by changing the language on page 2, line 8, to be consistent with the language on page 2, line 25. The issue, Mr. Speaker, is whether people are going to be under 16 years of age, qualify for this videotaping if they're under 16 years of age or if they're 16 or younger. And, Mr. Speaker, the reason for opposing this amendment and supporting my amendment that will be coming up in a few minutes is that my amendment would make this language consistent with the existing criminal code with regard to sexual abuse of a minor. The present statute for sexual abuse of a minor uses the phrase with regard to these sex crimes that it would be a person under 16 years of age. So I think that in order to be consistent, we should adopt the same language that's in the criminal code. That's the language that now appears on page 2, line 25, and if my amendment is adopted, would also appear on page 2, line 8. I would oppose the amendment, agree with the idea of consistency, but think we ought to have it consistent with the existing criminal code.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, believe it or not, I believe I'm going to support the amendment and disagree with my colleague from District 7. I think there's a different policy consideration here that what seems to be a necessary consistency with the criminal code based on his argument really is not. We have a separate policy question here as to when we think an individual is of such an age that the terrible experience of having to repeat testimony about an event like this over and over again is something that they can be able to withstand and suffer through and suffer the stress resulting from that. That's very different than making a policy decision with regard to the definitions of the elements of the crime to which the gentleman from District 7 refers. I think that the umbrella ought to be a bit broader and ought to include 16-year-olds, so I would support the current amendment, and that would mean, of course, I would anticipate opposing the other amendment suggested.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt amendment number 1 to the House Judiciary Committee substitute for Committee substitute for Senate Bill 547? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? The clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 34 yeas, 3 nays.
Amendment number 1 has been adopted. Before we read amendment number 2, for the information of the body, although this is the last item on today's calendar, before we break for lunch, if we finish this bill, I want to deal with some bills in the limbo file under unfinished business. And then anything that we don't finish, take care of after we come back from the lunch break, and including the possibility of a supplemental calendar. Representative Miller.
Speaker, for your planning purposes, I'm going to bring up reconsideration of House Bill 650 at this time, but I have no objection whatsoever to the Majority Leader placing it at the end of the calendar, but for your planning purposes, I wanted you to know that it was going to be brought up.
That was, which bill was that? Senate Bill 650? The Representative Miller has brought up his reconsideration of Senate Bill 650. At this time, will the clerk please read the bill?
Senate Bill number 650, by the Rules Committee, by request of the Governor, entitled An Act Relating to Licensing of Foster Homes, Group Homes, Nurseries, and Institutions, and Providing for an Effective Date.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the consideration of Senate Bill 650 in third reading under reconsideration be held at the bottom of today's calendar.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the next amendment to the House Judiciary Committee substitute for Committee substitute for Senate Bill 547.
Amendment number.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to forget this unless I do it. I'd like to give notice of reconsideration of my vote on Senate Bill 186.
notice of reconsideration has been given by Representative Clarkson on his vote on Senate Bill 186. Would you please read Amendment Number 2?
Amendment Number 2 by Representative O'Connell. Page 2, line 6, delete shall, insert may. Has this been reproduced? It's on all members' desks.
Amendment Number 2 by Representative O'Connell should be on each member's desk. Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Object.
There is objection. Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The amendment covers three parts of the bill, and I had considered putting it into separate amendments, but I think the thrust of it is all pretty much the same, so I submitted it as one amendment. Mr. Speaker, one of the basic problems I have with this bill is what the bill as written would do to the protections of the First Amendment, which, of course, speaks to freedom of the press, and also to the Sixth Amendment, which at least purports to guarantee a public trial. To take the amendment one part at a time, the first part on page 2, line 6, delete shall and insert may. The way the bill reads right now, that a prosecuting attorney, in other words, supposedly the attorney on behalf of the child abuse victim, all he has to do is request that this trial be videotaped, and that the judge then would have to do that. There's no discretion left to the judge whether or not it makes any sense to videotape it, whether there are any special circumstances that might suggest that in fact that the interests of the public and the interests of the trial and the interests of justice in general would be better served by in fact not videotaping, but having the testimony presented in regular public trial. The first part of this amendment would simply allow the judge some discretion in whether or not the trial should continue behind closed doors. I don't think there's any necessity that in every case, just because the prosecuting attorney requests it, that then from that moment on the thing would go on behind closed doors. Second part of the amendment deals with page 2, lines 17 and 18, where it says that, okay, once this videotaping thing proceeds, then the way the bill is written now, this evidence may or may not ever be admitted into evidence at the trial. Mr. Speaker, I submit that whatever goes on in this videotaping is, in fact, part of the trial. That's the whole reason that it's going on. It's testimony. It isn't just some preliminary investigation or anything like that. It is testimony, part of the trial. And I think it would be a miscarriage of justice if, in fact, this particular part of the trial was allowed to proceed behind closed doors, no members of the public admitted, and then some determination made as a result of that testimony that maybe even the case would be dropped at that point, and that nothing would ever happen, and there would be no particular knowledge of why the case was dropped at that point, since the trial was discontinued or could be discontinued, or even if it did continue and the evidence was never admitted, public would never know why, would never know what went on. And you know, every other part of a trial today is open to the public. Every part of a trial becomes part of the public record. We don't have secret trials in this country. The third part of it, then, deals with page 2, lines 24, line 26. The way this particular part of the bill reads right now, The thing could go behind closed doors for one reason only, and that is because the person who is a victim may be under 16 years of age or under. If we go back to the findings section of the bill on page 1, starting on line 22, the whole reason we're saying for this, that the whole reason as a public policy here is for all of this, is that according to the findings, or the purposes of the findings, it is on page 1, one of the findings is, the reason for this is because there might be a substantial likelihood that a young victim will suffer severe emotional distress, humiliation, and psychological damage if the person is required to testify in open court at trial. I don't argue with that. Those findings are
are very good and very laudable. But, Mr. Speaker, I think that the judge should have to make that finding at a trial. There may be many cases where again, there is no likelihood that a young victim will suffer severe emotional distress or humiliation or psychological damage. The judge, again, should have some discretion to make that decision, whether there is anything, and the court should be mandated to find that before this trial would proceed in secret. Mr. Speaker, if I could, I would like to offer an amendment to the amendment based on the language that we already amended the language in there, I believe, by the Judiciary Chair, having to do with the age of 16. I think it was wrong for me to introduce this by removing that 16 language. I have an amendment prepared here that would simply say that the court must find that the child is 16 years of age or under at the time of trial, and the court must find also that there is substantial likelihood, et cetera. If we could have it at ease, I'd like to give this to the
House, please stand at ease. During the at ease, there was an amendment to amendment number 2 placed on the clerk's desk. Will the clerk please read the amendment to amendment number 2?
The amendment by Representative O'Connell is to the lines 24 through 26. After the words, if the court finds, insert that the child is 16 years of age or younger at the time of the trial and that there is substantial likelihood and so forth.
Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment to the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the amendment to the amendment is adopted. This brings us back to the amended amendment number 2. Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I don't think the bill is a conspiracy against the press, and I don't think that it's going to be making for secret trials. I think that the idea that I suppose you'd have to think about the most incredibly extreme case involving a rather unusual individual, and even then I wonder to think of any person who is 16 years of age or younger who would not suffer severe emotional distress or humiliation or psychological damage in the way indicated in the bill. I don't think there's any reason to make that differentiation. I think that it's quite justifiable to provide that protection to all of those persons. Mr. Speaker, I think I have to talk a little bit about the bill. This bill has been around in various forms. It's not something that has any partisan identification. It's been supported by people of both major parties and a couple of legislatures. There's been a lot of work done on it in the two judiciary committees and two of the state legislatures. The problem is this. Most people who are not familiar with the criminal procedure and criminal process think in terms of a trial as a one-time-only event. Well, if you really think about some of the things you've kind of heard about, you'll find out that's not really the case. Under the current law, someone who is a victim of a crime of this sort ends up having to tell the story over and over again. That's not a very pleasant experience. That is, that if someone is arrested, charged with sexual assault under the current statutes, there has to be a preliminary hearing very quickly in order to justify the fact that he is being incarcerated and that he has been charged with the crime. That preliminary hearing is held before a district court judge, and the matter before the hearing is limited only to the issue of whether or not probable cause exists that the crime may have been committed and that he may have committed it. At that preliminary hearing, very often the victim is required to testify. Then, as a result of the preliminary hearing, the judge binds the person over the grand jury, because under the Alaska Constitution, as under the constitutions of most states in the United States, if he's going to be charged with a felony, he has a right to be charged by a grand jury under the theory that this is kind of the participation of the local community in the process of accusing someone of a crime. Then the victim must testify again before the grand jury. Then, in the event that there is a trial, the victim must then testify at trial. Mr. Speaker, the stakes are so very high in a serious sexual assault one, what under the prior law would have been called first-degree rape. The stakes are so high the criminal defense counsel are bound to heavily cross-examine this victim. Heavily cross-examine the victim. The circumstances are very difficult and are very frightening, and yet because the great power of the state is involved and the possibility of putting somebody away in jail based on a charge of a very serious crime, there's a great amount of latitude allowed in that cross-examination. Speaker, how many times is that going to happen, and is that going to happen in public? And can anyone really seriously suggest that there's someone who is 16 years of age or younger who is not, under those circumstances, going to suffer severe emotional distress, humiliation, or psychological damage? The amendment, I think, goes against the basic reason and idea for the bill, and that is to make sure that the testimony is offered once, under due process circumstances that do protect the rights of the defendant. The full right of cross-examination is available. It's available once, and it's on videotape. It's available for the fact trier. It's available for the judge to rule on objections with regard to evidentiary matters or questions that may have been raised. But then this terrible ordeal does not have to be gone through over and over again. Mr. Speaker, I think that under these circumstances, there's nothing private about the trial. When the trial is held, it's a public trial. This videotape becomes part of the public record. It's played in public. I tried to think about the circumstances of the second part of the amendment and what circumstances in which the evidence might not be admitted. I can't think of any. I mean, unless they had 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 20 eyewitnesses, so then the prosecution decided that the testimony of the victim was not necessary because there were so many other witnesses. But, of course, that usually is not the case in these situations. So I think the second part of the amendment really addresses a situation that doesn't really exist. And unfortunately, even though we may think the difference between shall and may is substantive, the reviser of statutes and legislative affairs agency does not. Therefore, the first part of the amendment may have no effect. But because the amendment is not divided, it's before us in toto, and the provision in the third part of the amendment would substantially change the bill along the lines I've indicated. I'm strongly against the amendment.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I also am opposed to the amendment, all sections of the amendment. It just seems to me that the second portion of the amendment requires the court, the wording that's being proposed, requires the court to admit this evidence. There might be a number of good, valid legal reasons why the evidence, or rather the testimony, should not be admitted. I think the problem that could arise from that is a constitutional problem, and that is it is requiring somewhat of a higher level of it's requiring the court to do something that they're not now required to do. You know, there's a lot to be said about the constitutionality of this kind of a bill to begin with, and I think you're probably going to hear some argument on this floor that constitutionally this is a bad bill. The United States Supreme Court right now has a case before them that they are about to decide on the constitutionality of just exactly this kind of an issue. I think requiring the court to admit this testimony would certainly weaken the bill and would raise some constitutional problems with it. Now, as to the third section of the amendment, I think it really weakens the original intent and almost destroys the original intent of the bill. And that is in saying that people 16 years of age and under can give this testimony by way of videotaping. I think that it would be placing an unfair burden on the court system in requiring them to make a judgment or make a determination that a young victim suffers severe emotional distress or humiliation or psychological damage. I don't think it is really that necessary. I think it's putting the court in a bad position. I think the court, anyway, will have to take this young person into court and make a determination by way of cross-examination or examining this young witness in the courtroom, which, you know, there's going to be some trauma suffered from that. So I oppose the all sections of the amendment.
Representative Hofford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With regard to the second section of the amendment, I just can't see that is admissible and will be admitted really changes what's in existence if you leave is admissible. I'm sure the defense attorney will make exactly the same arguments and get the same rulings out of the judge in that situation as he would in a situation where it's in open court. But the third provision is the provision that really concerns me, because it does require one more finding. If the court finds, well, I assume the judge has to go through the process to make that finding. I don't know what he's judging. Is the victim in tears? Do they speak haltingly? Are they adequately humiliated? I think it's one more round in a process where the victim becomes a criminal in their own mind. And I think it's a bad step. I think the bill is right just the way it is.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I oppose the amendment. The committee, in the deliberation over this bill, which was extensive, long, and varied, took into account the Wisconsin law, the New Hampshire law, plus the U.S. Supreme Court ruling on the Massachusetts law, and I believe that the amendment before us would do violence to the work that has been done. Thank you.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I support the amendment and think that anybody that wants to do anything besides do a meaningless act would support it as well. And that's because I believe that this legislation is unconstitutional unless it gives the court discretion, as this amendment would do. First of all, in response to the Judiciary Chair, there is no decision in that case by the U.S. Supreme Court on the Massachusetts law. That's the one that's before the court now. That law in Massachusetts, Mr. Speaker, said that there was no discretion in the judge, that he had to close the trial to the public when the person, the victim, was testifying, but had the discretion to close the entire trial, not just the testimony of the victim, but the entire trial. The argument in the Supreme Court, which, frankly, I think is a compelling argument, is that there is a very important constitutional right to a public trial, and that you cannot exclude or deny that right in a whole block of cases. You can only exclude the public from a trial when there is good reason. One's age is not by itself good reason. If that were the case, this bill could be amended to say that any rape victim who's 25 years old will not have a public trial, or any rape victim who's under 50 will not have a public trial. Mr. Speaker, this bill, and I support the bill, and I'm not suggesting that constitutionally the bill is a bad bill, but I think this amendment is absolutely necessary, because without the amendment, you are simply stating that the constitutional right to a public trial doesn't apply any time the victim is under 16 years of age, or 16 or younger. There is a severe constitutional problem with that. You need a finding, I believe, that there are unique circumstances involved. It is a trauma for anyone to have to testify about a rape. There's no question about that. And I feel as strongly about that and the need to protect people who are in that situation as much as anybody in this room. But I think that unless this amendment is adopted, you're going to find that this legislation is not constitutional. You are not going to solve your problem, and you're just not going to solve the problem, because I think you're going to find that it will not be implemented the way you think it should be implemented. So I support the amendment.
President Meekins.
Speaker, I oppose the amendment. I think that the amendment essentially would work at exact counter purposes to the intent of the legislation. You know, in these type of trials, particularly victims of sexual assault, it's really a tragedy, because a lot of those crimes aren't reported in the first place, and so when you finally get one that's and they're difficult to prove, when you finally get one going to court, I think it's in most cases there's pretty good evidence, or they wouldn't be going to court. And the defendant's rights, I think, are very much protected by our system, seeing, you know, he has to have a proponent, or have to have a be guilty beyond a reasonable doubt by all the jurors, you know. And I think that there's all sorts of protections for a defendant who perhaps might be innocent. But what really happens, and the real tragedy in our court system, is that the witnesses who are the original victims then become the witnesses in the trial are the ones that are put on trial. They're the ones that are attacked. They're the ones that are maligned.
And, you know, some attorneys are pretty capable and pretty vicious, and they don't really care what the, you know, what maybe the effect is going to be upon the witness. And I think it can be very devastating. It can be something that a young person would carry around forever. And in fact, the court experience might be worse than the original experience. It might be a lot worse. I think that's the finding that we've made in the finding section, where we say that there is a substantial likelihood that a young victim will suffer severe emotional distress, humiliation, and psychological damage if required to testify in open court at trial. I think that's true all the time. I think there is a likelihood in every single case that that will happen, a great likelihood. And I think that's the finding we're making, that that you should have just a cutoff at a certain age, because under that age it's extremely likely that they're going to suffer those things no matter what the facts are of the case, because that's the kind of experience that happens in a trial. So I think that this amendment would really hurt those people, and I don't think it's necessary. In addition, if the court's going to make this determination as opposed to just the blanket ability that we have in here, that they take a videotaping, and I might point out that the videotaping, you know, the judge is there, the defendant's there, he has all his rights, has the ability to cross-examine the witness, all that type of thing is protected under here. So we're not talking about some sort of special case situation. We're talking about a videotaping with the judge doing the same thing that he would under open trial, but just maybe it's just not quite as traumatic for the victim. Well, I think the thing to remember is that if we're trying to protect these victims from this additional traumatic experience, how's the court going to make a determination? If you accept this amendment and the court makes a determination, what are they going to do? They're going to listen to both sides, both attorneys from both sides, make an argument before the court about whether or not this is going to humiliate or cause distress or that type of thing to the victim. And one of the ways that that could be done is by calling in the victim. The potential witness, and interrogating that witness in hopes of showing the judge whether or not that's going to happen. And I think you've just circumvent the original intent. If the court has to make the determination, and if the defense has the right then to call in the victim, the very one we're trying to exclude from this traumatic experience, you know, you've just contradicted the original intent. Even if the court subsequently rules that, yes, this person is going to be humiliated and et cetera and shouldn't be called in, they've already been called in, so what purpose was it?
Representative Brown?
Speaker, I think it's very important for the record here and also for the argument to point out that there is not, in my view, a constitutional problem with this bill without the amendment. Mr. Speaker, the bill does not provide for any portion of a trial to be secret. There is no violation of the Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution nor of Article 1, Section 11 of the Alaska State Constitution. There, with regard to the way in which one part of the evidence is presented, it is presented in a different way. Instead of having one witness testify in open court, that same testimony is played on a videotape machine in open court. People hear it, people in the gallery, people who walk in the door. It's a public matter. But the person who is on that videotape is not required to be there and to go through that same ordeal over and over again. That is not a violation of the right of someone to have a public trial. That's not a trial by court of star chamber. That is a public trial. The only difference is that the evidence is obtained in a different way. And, Mr. Speaker, with regard to the obtaining evidence in this way, the only constitutional right that relates to that question of having the evidence in a different way is the right to confront witnesses. The bill guarantees the right of full cross-examination at the time that the videotape is taken. Therefore, that right is fully available, and therefore a full due process right under the 14th Amendment, and again Article 1, Section 11 of the Alaska Constitution, is still available. Therefore, I do not agree at all with the arguments that somehow the amendment will cure some constitutional defect in the bill. Citing a case in Massachusetts involving a law where actually the judge was ordering the trial itself closed is not even relevant, because that does not happen under this bill without the amendment.
Representative O'Connell?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In response to the comments by the minority leader, Mr. Speaker, looking at page 2 of the bill, roughly subparagraph B that starts on page 10, it very clearly says that during the videotaping, the trial judge shall determine those persons other than the prosecuting attorney, the defendant, and the defendant's attorney who may attend the videotaping proceedings. Now, Mr. Speaker, there is nothing in this bill that says that those videotapings will ever be made public. There's nothing in this bill that says they must become part of the record of the trial. There is nothing says that the public will ever have a chance to see them. If you go down to the next part of the bill, which begins on line 20, it says, and now we're talking about not if the evidence was videotaped, but if, in fact, the trial is going on and that the victim who is under age 16 is testifying. After notice to the defendant, the state may apply to the court for an order excluding the public from the courtroom during the testimony of the child who is an alleged victim. The order shall be granted if the court finds that the child is under 16 years of age. Now, Mr. Speaker, if that isn't an outright violation of the Sixth Amendment, I don't know what is. The Sixth Amendment says that all persons charged with criminal conduct in this trial or in this country are guaranteed a right to a public trial.
Representative Clarkson?
Well, just to follow up on that, and just so everybody understands, and in response to the piccolo player from Fairbanks, everything he said was wrong. And I suggest he read the bill. It does exclude the public from the trial. It is a violation of the Sixth Amendment. With regard to the fellow member from District 7 who is concerned about the hearing where you would decide under Representative O'Connell's amendment whether or not a person is going to be, their testimony is going to be videotaped, the United States Supreme Court has ruled that that proceeding can constitutionally be closed to the public. That's a pretrial hearing. The Supreme Court has ruled you can have pretrial hearings which are closed to the public. When you get to the trial, that's where you have the problem. That's what has to be made public. That's what the section starting on line 20, page 2, does not allow me to be made public, and I'm just trying to say that the amendment proposed that we're discussing here will make it more likely that that's going to be upheld under the Sixth Amendment.
Are you ready for the question, Representative Brown?
Mr. Speaker, if the prior speaker wants to say I overstated my case, I may have, but I can still point out that if page 2, lines 27 through page 3, line 2 are read, that the public is perfectly protected and the individual is perfectly protected with regard to having a public trial in that the materials are available. They do not remain secret. The whole idea of having a public trial is to make sure that the information is available. It may be that it's not going to be available within 2 minutes after the action, but it's certainly within a reasonable time as indicated on page 2, line 29, which I think is certainly enough to save the bill.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 2 as amended to the House Judiciary Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 547? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk, may take the roll.
The roll shows 19 yeas, 20 nays.
Amendment number 2, as adopted, or as amended, has failed to be adopted. Will the clerk please read the next amendment?
Amendment number 3 by Representative Clarkson. Page 2, line 8. After is, insert under. And after age, delete or younger.
Representative Clarkson.
I'd like to withdraw that amendment.
Without objection, amendment number 3 will be withdrawn. Clerk, please read the next amendment.
Amendment number 4 by Representative Clarkson, page 3, line 17. Add new subsection 9 to read. 9, a member of the press.
Representative Clarkson.
Move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the amendment.
There is objection. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, the Senate version of this bill had this provision in it, and once again, it's an effort to make this legislation constitutional. Part of the concern expressed with regard to minors who are required to testify is that they have to testify in front of a large group of people. It's an extremely difficult situation. I agree, and I agree that
under some circumstances, as we've just discussed, that that all of those people should be excluded. However, a member of the press is an individual, one person. It isn't the crowd that I think produces the type of trauma that we're talking about. And I think, once again, that if we want to have something that's going to withhold constitutional attack, that we need to adopt this amendment.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This was discussed in the House Judiciary Committee. We discussed it and thought about it long and hard, and we decided in the committee that the press would have ample opportunity to these videotapes after they were public, and that you then put the judge in the position of deciding which member of the press is going to be allowed to the videotaping.
Are you, Representative Anderson?
Mr. Speaker, I oppose the amendment. I think there's some sort of an assumption by the maker of that amendment that having the press in the presence or in the courtroom at the time that the testimony is given on videotape makes that testimony more legal for some reason. I think that's a false assumption. I think he knows better than that. I don't think having a member of the press or a number of people belonging to the press present is going to provide any validity or any make it any more legal than what it might be anyway. So I don't think the amendment really means anything.
Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I don't know if the amendment is itself is all that relevant, but on the remarks, the previous remarks of the Judiciary Chair, there isn't anything in 1245-048 as proposed in this legislation that would require that any videotape be taken or any videotape be available to the public. That appears in 047 above. I think that was pointed out by Representative O'Connell on debate on his amendment. And what 1245-048 does is to close the trial to the public. It seems to me that without the finding that was suggested in the amendment offered by Representative O'Connell, that there at least is a serious question as to 45048 is proposed, is in accord with Article 1, Section 11 of the Alaska Constitution and the Sixth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. I don't know if the members here are looking at the two different sections, but they are two different sections, and they say two different things. And the second section there, the one that's proposed to be amended by this amendment, is an attempt to at least preserve some vestiges of a public trial. I'm not sure it does that, as a matter of fact. But I just wanted to point that out to that the remarks of the Judiciary Chair really don't apply to any videotape necessarily being taken under 048 at all.
Representative Meekins.
Speaker, I know there's a constitutional argument being made here that we should change the language on line, page 2, line 24, or 25, actually, to make it so that the court should make the determination rather than it's just a blanket exception if the person is under 16. But I don't think you should extend that argument. That's another question. I don't think you should extend that argument to put the press in there. What we'd have if you took this amendment is that the public would be excluded, but the press could be in there. And the first point on that is that sense. I mean, you can't really say the public's being excluded if the press is there. And I think the harm that this is trying to avoid is going to be still there if you allow the press in. So the question is whether or not you can have a victim testify without the public. I think that's the question we should debate. And if you decide you can exclude the public, then the press ought to be excluded too. And if you want to put the press in, then what difference does it make if you say you're excluding the public but you include the press? I mean, it's the same thing, just about. So I think the amendment is rather, not to the point. I think we should defeat this amendment. If somebody wants to offer a separate one that just deals with trying to make this section 048 constitutional in regards to making a finding or something, perhaps that's something that we should discuss. And I think maybe there have been some good arguments made in that case, and I'd like to listen to that. But I think trying to pretend that we're excluding the public and admitting the press, that makes no sense to me.
Representative Hoffman?
Well, I'm a little bit confused. As I read B,
It says the testimony given during the time the public is excluded shall be available to the public upon request within a reasonable time sufficient to allow preparation of a tape recording or transcript of the testimony. And then it goes on down through 1 through 8 with 9 proposed. I think it does provide the information to the public.
Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I guess the amendment points up a strange anomaly that was at least implied by the majority leader right now, because although my first blush response was to put it back, it was in the Senate bill, we could end up with the ridiculous result that if we add to the list of those people who are included under the public, under subsection C, that is excluded, that is in the section public means all persons except, and then a member of the press, then that means that the member of the press is not a member of the public, and therefore may not have the testimony recorded under subsection B, which I don't think is what anybody had in mind. Therefore, if the amendment were to pass, another portion of the bill would have to be rewritten.
Representative Clarkson.
Just very briefly, the amendment, of course, is a very, very practical amendment, and this is in response to people who say that the difference between the press and the public. The fact is, almost all of the litigation on the public trial provision of the Constitution is initiated by the press.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Earlier, I did make a mistake when I spoke about a U.S. Supreme Court ruling. It was a Massachusetts Supreme Court ruling where the Richmond newspapers in Virginia challenged the law that was the law of the state of Massachusetts, and the Supreme Court in that case upheld the law, and there was no newspapers or press available to those particular videotapings.
Are you ready for the question, Representative Brown?
Mr. Speaker, I really think that I might support the amendment if it were not defective. That is, I'll try again. The problem is that we may want to have the press defined as included within the public or within the generic group referred to under B but not A, for instance. And yet that's not the effect of the amendment. We don't want to accomplish the ridiculous result that a member of the press would be the only member of the public not able to obtain a transcript or videotape of the closed portions of the trial. And that would be the result. So if we could have it at ease, maybe an amendment to the amendments in order, unless I'm misreading this completely.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, if this amendment's adopted, I'll present that amendment.
Representative Meekins.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we're talking about the court system, the way it functions. I don't think the court system is going to function any differently if the press is excluded from this testimony. The question is whether or not they're going to be able to write a certain story or something, and that's maybe a good philosophical thing to debate on. But it just really seems to me that in the case of a person who's really been victimized and traumatized by this, a young child, and then I think it's to have them have to go through the same experience again and be interrogated in open public with the press copying everything down at the time that it's happening, I think that is just a trauma that we don't need to put on this individual victim. And all the rest of the court system is there. I mean, the judge is there, the same rights are there, the jury's there, everybody's there. So it's not going to make any difference, because the people making the decision on guilty or not guilty are hearing the same thing either way. And they shouldn't be reading the papers anyway, so that should have no effect on their decision, one way or the other, whether we let the press in or we don't. The only person it has an effect on is this victim who's going to be additionally traumatized, and the readers of the paper, perhaps, who don't get the story on the same day, but they do get it maybe a little later. If it's still news, they can get it off the tape recording or the transcript of the testimony. And I think that that's totally appropriate. We're just delaying any public information, but at least you don't have attorneys playing to the press right when they're there, and the additional trauma of a person having to answer questions, knowing that someone's tape recording it right off there for radio or writing it down. I think that putting this press back in here is going to do harm to people that isn't worth what it gets.
Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With regard to those remarks by the immediate prior speaker, that would be fine if the only people in this country who had an interest in a trial, and I'm not speaking about an interest now from a new standpoint, but from an interest from the standpoint of justice and our own protections under the Bill of Rights. Those arguments would be fine if the only people that had an interest in the trial were, in fact, the victim and the prosecuting attorney and the defense attorney, the judge and the jury. But, Mr. Speaker, we all have an interest in the way trials are conducted in this country. We do not have closed trials. That's one of the most basic freedoms that we have in this country. We can go on, I suppose, and talk about the trauma and the tragedy, and I don't argue with that. That is, the concerns with that are very eloquently stated in the findings and the policy purpose of this bill. I don't argue with that. On the other hand, we could also go back into history and find examples of trials where, in fact, people have been brought to trial and found guilty, and it develops later that all of the evidence was fraudulent, that people have spent years in jail, and in some cases, I suppose, have been executed on the basis of a faulty trial. And, Mr. Speaker, the concept of a public trial, to me, you know, should not be broached. And I feel that that's what we're doing in this legislation, totally aside from the protections of the victim. Surely we're all concerned about those traumas that the person would have to go through. I think, you know, I regret that the amendments that I had proposed earlier were not inserted into the bill. I feel that they would have protected the individuals and still would have left the thing open to the public. This proposed amendment at least guarantees that one person would be able to represent the press there. I had a similar amendment presented, worded a little differently, and didn't submit it yet. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 4 to the House Judiciary Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 547? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 15 yeas, 24 nays.
The House has failed to adopt Amendment Number 4. Are there further amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hofford? Representative O'Connell?
May we have any ease, please?
House, please stand at ease. Come back to order. During the ease, there was another amendment placed on the clerk's desk, Amendment Number 5. Clerk, please read the next amendment.
Amendment Number 5 by O'Connell to page 3, line 2. Add new sentence. In any event, such testimony shall be made public no later than 72 hours after testimony is concluded each day of the trial.
Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
There is objection. Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess I'm not surprised at the objections either. The amendment, I believe, is quite clear on the surface. It addresses the part of the bill where we're not talking about videotaped evidence now, but rather the part of the bill where the trial is being conducted, and assuming the bill were passed, the public would have been excluded from the trial. The language of the bill at the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3 says that the testimony eventually will be made public, but it allows the court system sufficient time to prepare a tape recording or a transcript. Well, Mr. Speaker, we all know that the bureaucracy can do whatever it wants to do as far as time delays. Sometimes it can take several months, and that's not an exaggerated statement, to get a transcript. This would simply say that such testimony will be available to the public no more than 72 hours after the termination of each day's activity. Mr. Speaker, there are times here when we want to go back over our recorded proceedings, and if the chief clerk can work until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning and have a transcript available in the form of a House journal by the next morning when we convene again, I can't imagine why the court system would not be able to have this stuff available in 72 hours.
Representative Hofford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think this is really not a problem. On January 11th, the Supreme Court adopted a court rule 37.5, which became effective February 1st. That court rule deals directly with access to public records, and if I can just quote from that, public records means all or any portion of any written, typed, or printed document, any magnetic, electronic recording of sounds, pictures, symbols, any papers, maps, photographic film, prints, electronic magnetic tapes or punched cards, or any other document or item filed with or prepared, owned, or used by the Alaska court system which contains information relating to the conduct of the public's business and which does not contain any of the following or subject matter within the specific categories: personnel information, memoranda or drafts, work product of attorneys, or matters which are required to be kept sealed or confidential pursuant to statute, court rule, or order of court for good cause. This statute does not require that those things be kept confidential, and therefore, under this court rule, which is not amended by this bill, those things are public record, and they are available through the normal process.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 5 to the House Judiciary Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 547? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 15 yeas, 22 nays.
House has failed to adopt Amendment Number 5. Are there further amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that House Judiciary Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 547 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 547, Judiciary, amended, entitled An Act Permitting the Videotaping of or the Exclusion of the Public During Testimony of Young Victims of Sexual Offenses and Changing Rule 804, Rules of Evidence Relating to Exceptions to the Hearsay Rule.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I have, throughout the last couple of years, adopted a policy of not supporting legislation that I believe to be unconstitutional. I'm not going to follow that policy today because I want very much for this legislation to be constitutional and to be effective, an effective way of protecting the victims of sexual assaults such as we've been discussing here. I'm not sure that it will be a successful legislation. I think that there are constitutional problems with it. I am going to vote for it because I support the intent involved in the legislation.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would not like the record to stand that there are constitutional problems with this legislation. Over the months that the Judiciary Committee has had this piece of legislation before us, we have attempted in every way possible to assure that it was and that it is constitutional. There's no guarantee ever that any piece of legislation will be found constitutional. But if there was ever a chance that this legislation could be found constitutional, I believe that it is in this document before us, because we have researched the legislation from all the other states, worked with Vic Crum, who is the prosecutor on sexual abuse stations in this cases in our state. And I'm confident that this legislation is constitutional.
Question is, shall House Judiciary Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 547, amended House, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 33 yeas, 5 nays.
House Judiciary Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 547, amended House, has passed the House. Before I ask the Majority Leader for a recess motion until 1:30, are there announcements? Representative Fanning?
Not an announcement, Mr. Speaker, but I'd like to give notice of reconsideration of my vote on House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 256.
I believe notice of reconsideration has been given on, I believe there's a court rule I overlooked. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage of House Judiciary Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 547 be considered as a roll call vote on changing Supreme Court Rule Number 804.
Is there objection? Representative Brown? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Under announcements, Representative Brown?
Not under announcements, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on Senate Bill 547.
Notice of reconsideration on Senate Bill 547 has been given by Representative Brown. And Representative Fanning, which bill did you give notice of reconsideration on?
House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 256.
256, thank you. Representative Fuller?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There will be a Rules Committee meeting on Friday at 8:30 in the Buttigieg Room. The agenda will be Senate Bill 732, an act relating to the issuance of a production license for mineral extraction from the state land, and Senate Bill 101, an act relating to teachers' retirement system and authorizing adoption of regulations by the Alaska Teachers' Retirement Board.
Representative O'Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sort of an inquiry. Is it the intent to convene at 9 a.m. again tomorrow rather than 10?
Yes, it is.
10?
I've announced yesterday that we would run session up until no later than 5, so the committees could meet after 5 or before 9 o'clock.
And we will be coming back in at about 1:30 or so today?
Yes, sir.
So.
Come back in at 1:30 to finish up. See, there's at least one reconsideration moved to the bottom of today's calendar, and unfinished business, and perhaps a supplemental calendar.
Thank you.
Representative Sutcliffe?
Yeah, immediately upon the adjournment of this afternoon, the House Resources will be taking up Senate Bill 794, an act relating to the management of state land for marine parks.
Is that this afternoon near 5 o'clock or right now?
Immediately upon adjournment this afternoon, 5 o'clock or whenever.
Thank you. Further announcements? Representative Meekins?
Speaker, the Conference Committee on Loans is meeting at 5 o'clock also.
Conference Committee on Loans is meeting at 5, and there is a bond meetings at 7. Representative Hofford, a recess motion until 1:30, please.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the House stand in recess until 1:30.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the House stands in recess until 1:30. No, I don't, thanks. I'd like to establish a quorum. Will members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to indicate their presence by voting? Clerk, please take the roll.
The roll shows 27 members present.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to bring up my notice of reconsideration on Senate Bill 299 and ask for a brief at ease.
Will the clerk please read the bill and then we'll stand at ease.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill 299 be held under reconsideration for tomorrow's calendar.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. We have before us the daily calendar, and we had previously moved to, when the reconsideration of Senate Bill 650 was brought up, to move that to the end of today's calendar. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill 650 be held for tomorrow's calendar.
Be held over till tomorrow's calendar in third reading. So, as a matter of clarification, Representative Hofford, is that what you moved on 299?
That's correct. It was under reconsideration, I believe.
Yes.
And it came up under third reading. It was in third reading before us. It should appear on tomorrow's calendar in third reading.
Okay. Question, the motion before us is to hold a Senate Bill 650 over until tomorrow's calendar and third reading under reconsideration. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. This brings us to unfinished business. I'd like to deal with several items in the limbo file. If everybody would find their limbo file, I'll ask the House to stand at ease just momentarily while everyone gets their limbo file out. House, please stand at ease. Representative Hofford.
In the Senate amendments to House Bill 187, amended thus adopting Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 187 finance, and recommend the body vote yes.
The clerk, please read the bill.
House Bill number 187 amended. Should I read the Senate version? Senate Committee substitute for House Bill number 187, Finance, entitled An Act Relating to Computation of Tax Penalties and Providing for an Effective Date.
The motion is that the House concur in Senate amendments to House Bill 187 amended, thus adopting Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 187, Finance. Representative Hopper.
Mr. Speaker, the only difference is that the House bill was dealing with the 5% shall be added to the tax for each full 30-day period, and it deleted or fraction thereof, and then it made the change at the bottom of the section. The penalty is computed only on the unpaid balance of the tax liability as determined by the department. The Senate version deleted the word full and left the penalty as computed only on the unpaid balance of the tax liability as determined by the department. The prime sponsor of the legislation has gone over it, and he feels that the House should concur as well.
Is there further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House concur in Senate amendments to House Bill 187 amended, thus adopting Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 187, Finance? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? The clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 34 yeas, no nays.
So the House has concurred in Senate amendments to House Bill 187 amended, thus adopting Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 187, Finance. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call and adoption of Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 187, Finance, be considered the roll call and effective date clause.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, the next item in the limbo list we want to deal with is House Concurrent Resolution 49. At this time, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Concurrent Resolution 49, thus adopting House Concurrent Resolution 49, amended Senate, and recommend the body vote yes.
Will clerk please read the bill?
House Concurrent Resolution number 49 is amended by the Senate relating to the speed limits at Manilchik from mile 134.6 to mile 137 of the Sterling Highway and from the Parks Highway to mile 1.0 of the Petersville Road.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, the amendment, as added in the title, deals with the Parks Highway to mile 1 of the Petersville Road, and that is added in. That's the only difference in the House and Senate version.
Is there further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House concur in Senate amendments to House Concurrent Resolution 49, thus adopting House Concurrent Resolution 49, amended Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? The clerk may take the roll.
Roll shows 34 yeas, one nay.
The House has concurred in Senate amendments to House Concurrent Resolution 49, thus adopting House Concurrent Resolution 49, amended Senate. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, the next bill on the limbo list I'd like to deal with is Committee Substitute for House Bill 101. The Senate has a committee substitute with extensive changes. Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House concur in the Senate amendments to Second Finance Committee Substitute for House Bill 101, thus adopting Senate Finance Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 101, and recommend the body vote yes.
Clerk, please read the bill.
Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 101 by the Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to State Taxation and Providing for an Effective Date.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, may we have a brief at ease?
The House, please stand at ease. Back to order.
You read the bill, right? You did read the bill, didn't you?
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I too would urge members to vote yes on this one. The Senate eliminated the new tax on aviation fuel, the surtax, which a number of us had argued about on the floor, and I'm glad to see that's out of the bill.
Will the clerk please read the bill?
Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 101, Finance, entitled An Act Relating to State Taxation and Providing for an Effective Date.
Representative Meekins.
Speaker, I believe it appears to me there's more changes than that from the House to Senate.
Yes.
I wonder if somebody could go over a few of the others. Since they changed the title to An Act Relating to Taxation, I assume they made quite a few changes.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, there are a number of changes. I'll try to go down through them. It's correct that the surtax on aviation fuel is deleted. And Section 1 of the House version is identical to Section 4 of the Senate version. Section 2 of the House version is contained in Section 10 of the Senate version. There's a little bit of different language there, but the same intent, and it works the same way. Section 3 is the same as Section 11. Again, different language, same intent, and it does work. Section 4 is Section 16 of the Senate bill. It goes back to the Department of Revenue cannot go back and collect the back taxes based on good faith efforts to when they sold fuel, and it was intended to go for non-motor use. Then the Senate added a section dealing with when the Commissioner of Fish and Game provides information to the Commissioner of Revenue in the designation of developing fish species. I think this deals with the fish tax. The Senate also added the language that we had in another bill on changing the rate of interest on delinquent taxes from 8 to 12% under Title 43, and also overpayment of taxes going back the other direction is also changed to from 8 to 12%. Section 5 changed language from a duty to a tax, which is just consistency. Section 6 allows persons who resell fuel to be reimbursed if the fuel was initially sold for motor fuel and then was to be used as non-motor fuel. Also, the Section 7 clarifies and allows the final user to receive reimbursement if it's not used as motor fuel and the tax was paid. Section 8 limits the length of time for reimbursements to 1 year. Section 9 adds new language concerning the refund of a claim to a reseller. Section 12 adds a definition of a qualified dealer. Section 13 ties the delinquent taxes for motor fuel to 4305-225. Section 14 is, again, the designation of developing commercial fish species will be made by January instead of June. And Section 15 allows the federal investment tax credit provisions to be retroactive under Alaska statutes. Also says the section does not affect the investment tax credit provisions presently in Alaska statute. Section 17 is a repealer. It repeals the information required of fish processors and buyers. It repeals the Department of Revenue cigarette tax from the administrative adjudication section of the Administrative Procedures Act. And Sections 18, 19, and 20 are the effective dates.
Representative Gardner.
Speaker, I appreciate the explanation of what these sections are. I'm not sure I understand what the effect or the result of Section 15 is, and if it's going to cost anything to the state.
Representative Cotton.
Speaker, Section 15, I just noticed that too. It's I think it's identical to the language that's contained in another bill that's currently lodged in the House Rules Committee, as is other parts of this bill. The Senate has tacked on bills that are currently in various House committees. This Section 15 would just advance the application of those federal investment tax credits an additional year. The way it is right now, they have to wait about a year and a half after the federal government passes it before it applies on a state level. This advances it all the way up to the first of this year, I believe. So it's something that would have happened anyway, but we're moving it up about 1 year. It'll result in a reduction of state revenues to the tune of about $700,000.
Representative Rogers.
Mr. Speaker, I too had missed Section 15 when I'd earlier looked at the bill. This doesn't apply to the tax credits that can be bought and sold under federal law, does it? Is it different investment tax credits, or is it those saleable tax credits that we're now allowing into Alaska?
Representative Meekins.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I just read it now, but it looks to me like it's the same as the Economic Recovery Act of 81, which was the same one that passed those, and I agree with some of the comments earlier about that's probably the worst thing that's gone by the Congress in a long time, people buying and selling those tax credits, and I don't know if we have to pick that up or not under under our legislation, but I sure wouldn't want to hurry that. If we have to do it without change, if we don't change the law, maybe it happens anyway, but I don't see any reason to make it happen a year earlier, and I wonder if somebody could address that if they know.
Representative Abood.
Mr. Speaker, I'm looking up at Second Finance, Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 101, Second Finance, and it says second up there, and yet we're not talking about the same one here. Are we going on the finance one or the second finance one? I'm confused on this.
Well, the question is, shall we adopt the Senate amendments to Committee Substitute for House Bill 101, Second Finance, thus adopting Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 101, Finance? It's up there correctly, I believe. I thought somebody was going to answer Meekin's question. Representative Meekin's question. Representative Brown?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I think I'm probably in favor of most of the bill except Section 15. I know that on this floor, dealing with other legislation, we've discussed not tracking with the federal law with regard to that rather preposterous action of having tax benefits buyable and saleable as though they were commodities in themselves, which is going on now under the Federal Internal Revenue Code. Of course, we kind of have to take it or leave it, I suppose. If we leave it, we really just don't concur. I don't know if this bill is going to be in jeopardy if we don't concur or not, but at least at this time, I'm going to have to vote no on the motion because of Section 15. And maybe there can be informal discussions with the Senator. Maybe if my position prevails, it'll have to go to a conference committee. In my view, the rest of the bill's probably all right. I'm not an expert on every different part of these revenue statutes, but Section 15 really bothers me.
Representative Metcalf?
Mr. Speaker, the question was asked as to whether or not it would place the bill in jeopardy if it was not concurred with. I would say yes, it very well may. The bill, as it moved through the process, was a product of a great deal of compromise, and managed to withstand a great deal of resistance from the Department of Revenue and other sources of resistance. And with the removal of the amendments that were made on the House floor, providing for a tax on aviation fuel, and with the inserting of some things that the Department of Revenue was looking for, that resolved the resistance and also disposed of a probable governor's veto. So this was a compromise. It's a large package of legislation addressing a number of issues, and this addition was to appease those who may have well killed the bill ultimately. And I think its removal might do the total package a great deal of damage, and I think in total the package is a needed package, and in total warrants a yes vote.
Representative Miller?
Mr. Speaker, this bill's not in jeopardy. You know, we at any time, any member can rise up and move to concur, and we can do that. The worst thing that could happen would be go to a free conference or a conference. Wouldn't even have to be a free conference, just a conference. And remove the section, particularly this section that Representative from Eagle River indicated could cost the state better than $500,000, $700,000, I believe he said, if this bill passes as is. We're in no jeopardy. Any 21 votes on this floor can pass this bill out exactly as it is right now, right up to the time you bring the gavel down, sunny die, Mr. Speaker.
The House, please stand at ease.
Mr. Speaker, there is a question that I'd like to research on that, and that deals with the transfer of those tax credits. We don't really have time to do it right now. Rather than go ahead and act on this motion, I would like to move and ask unanimous consent that I be allowed to withdraw the motion. Then after we've gone through the supplemental calendar and the other things we're going to try and do, if we do have time and I do have those answers, then I'll remake the motion at that time.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Halford.
Mr. Speaker, the next bill in the limbo file that I'd like to deal with is Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 176. That has become an appropriation for the continuation of the legislature. At this time, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that the House concur in the Senate amendments to Health, Education, and Social Services Committee Substitute for House Bill 176 amended, thus adopting Senate Rules Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 176. And recommend the body vote yes.
Will the clerk please read the bill?
Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 176, by the Rules Committee entitled An Act Making a Supplemental Appropriation for the Operation of the Legislature and Providing for an Effective Date.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I want to raise a point of order about my poor little bill. First of all, Mr. Speaker, I think that the amendment by the Senate violates the rules of this body. I think it's Rule 35 and the Constitution with regard to appropriations as well. There are several points of order to be raised. In addition to the points of order, Mr. Speaker, I would question the germaneness of the Senate amendment. It has absolutely no relation. They shifted from a bill relating to public an authorizing bill relating to public assistance to an appropriation bill relating to the legislature. There's absolutely no relationship. It's a switch from a non-appropriation to appropriation. Change in subject. Just about every rule that I can think of has been violated here.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure that there isn't some relationship between temporary assistance for needy persons and the operation of the legislature.
Representative Clarkson, are you asking me to rule on your point of order? Or do you just want to make your point? Representative Meekins?
We have a minute, please.
House, please stand at ease. Come back to order. There have several points of order have been raised on the motion before us. I'm going to ask Representative Hofford to withdraw his motion, and so I can have an opportunity to check into some of the points that have been raised. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that my motion for needy persons be withdrawn.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Hofford. Moving right along.
Let's see. Mr. Speaker, the next bill I'll try is Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 386. Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 386, thus adopting Senate Rules Committee substitute for House Bill 386, and recommend the body vote yes.
Will clerk please read the bill?
Senate Committee substitute for House Bill number 386 by the Rules Committee entitled An Act Relating to Business Corporations, Reinstatement of Certain Dissolved Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act Village Corporations to Corporate Status and Providing for an Effective Date.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, the Senate language added is the language dealing with Native village corporations that were involuntarily dissolved and didn't meet the requirements for reincorporation. And this just provides that for 1 year from the effective date of the act, they can go back into corporate status.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Cotton. House, please stand at ease.
Mr. Speaker, at least we're getting everybody interested in what's in the limbo file. At this time, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent the motion be withdrawn on House Bill 386.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, the next bill I'd like to try is a committee substitute for House Bill 206, Judiciary Amended Senate. It's a bill dealing with mobile home park agreements.
You make the motion, sir.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the House concur in Senate amendments to Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 206, thus adopting Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 206 amended Senate, and ask the members to vote yes.
Clerk, please read the bill.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 206, Judiciary amended Senate, entitled An Act Relating to the Termination of Rental Agreements of Mobile Home Park Dwellers and Tenants.
Representative Abood.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's Abood, not Obood. That's only on St. Patrick's Day. I sincerely hope that this will not be a valiant effort and a try. I sincerely hope that it'll pass. It's been needed for quite some time. The only change that the Senate made in the bill is on line 11 and a half, enforceable under AS 3403-130. that then all it does is conform to the rules and regulations what a landlord may adopt and for the benefit of the tenant and the landlord. That's on page 7, and I'm reading it. I won't go through it because it's rather lengthy, but that's the only change, and I've gone over it, and my staff has gone over it in detail. It conforms to what the mobile homeowners want, and I would highly recommend that that the body pass it without any further ado. Thank you.
Is there further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House concur in Senate amendments to Committee Substitute for House Bill 206 Judiciary, thus adopting Committee Substitute for House Bill 206 Judiciary, amended Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
The roll shows 31 yeas, 4 nays.
The House has concurred in Senate amendments, thus adopting Committee Substitute for House Bill 206, Judiciary Amended Senate. Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, the next bill I'd like to deal with is Senate Committee Substitute, House Bill 756, Finance. That's the bill dealing with the Fire Suppression Fund. Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent the House concur with Senate amendments to the Finance Committee Substitute for House Bill 756, amended, thus adopting Senate Finance Committee Substitute for House Bill 756, and recommend the body vote yes.
Clerk, please read the bill.
Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 756 by the Finance Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Fire Suppression Fund and Providing for an Effective Date.
Representative Hofford.
Mr. Speaker, the only difference in the two bills is that the original House bill added $10 million increased the amount available in the Fire Suppression Fund from $5 to $10 million. The Senate bill increases the amount available from $5 to $9 million. In both cases, there is an exclusion. The fund may not be used for capital expenditures.
Representative Cotton.
Speaker, I got a question about the fire suppression fund and the rainy day account. How much has already been taken from the rainy day account and used for fire suppression? And are there any provisions for replenishing the rainy day account?
Representative Meekins.
Speaker, that question came up in finance, and I did look into it afterwards, and there's been $10 million taken out so far for fire suppression, $5 million at a time, twice. So now the amount of money in the rainy day account, instead of being $350, is only $340 million. And there was the original concept that was envisioned was that they would take the money out of the rainy day account.